There's a religious revival in America, and many newly religious Americans are not returning to the churches and synagogues they grew up with. Instead, they're joining religious groups outside of the mainstream or reinterpreting the teachings and rituals of the religions they were born into. This phenomenon is the focus of a special four-part series titled On This Side of Paradise, A Look at American Religions. We're featuring the series Tuesdays at 4 o'clock during the month of October. The series concludes next Tuesday at 4, when the subject will be Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. Today's edition is titled In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. In one half hour at the conclusion of this documentary, I'll be joined in the studio by one of the people featured on the documentary, Imam Ali, the founder and leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. When he joins us, our phones will be open for your questions and comments. If you'd like to jot down our phone number in the meantime, it's 923-2774. On This Side of Paradise was produced at WHYY-FM for Temple University's Religion Department. Maeve McGoran is the producer, Ellen Chary and Anthony Mateo, project directors.
All of us have suffered here in this country political oppression at the hands of the white man, economic exploitation at the hands of the white man, and social degradation at the hands of the white man. Now, in speaking like this doesn't mean that we're anti-white, but it does mean we're anti-exploitation. We're anti-degradation. We're anti-oppression. And if the white man doesn't want us to be anti him, let him stop oppressing and exploiting and degrading.
In the early 1960s, the words of Malcolm X echoed the rage felt by members of the black separatist group, the Nation of Islam. 20 years later, many of those same members make up the American Muslim Mission. Their leader, Wallace Muhammad, offers a radically different message.
Our claim as on the name Children of God is not a claim based on skin color. It's based on our own righteousness, you see? So we are Muslims not because we are Jews. We are Muslims not because we are Gentiles. We are Muslims not because we are black Americans. We are Muslims because we have the nature to recognize and to accept a body of truth that have rules that establishes peace. And a person who's divinely peaceful is a Muslim. That's what the word means.
In this program, we'll look at some of the reasons for the transformation of the Nation of Islam from a powerful black nationalist organization to an essentially middle-class body of Orthodox Muslims. Islam is the fastest-growing religion in the world. From the Middle East and Africa to Russia, China, and the rest of Asia, Muslim populations are expanding. Dr. Ismail Al-Faruqi of the Religion Department of Temple University accounts for its appeal.
Primarily, I would say Islam is growing because of its universalism, of its world affirmation, of its humanism. One could also add its rationalism. Its doctrine, as you know, presents a very rational view of the universe. It emphasizes human innocence. It emphasizes human capacity to save oneself, as well as responsibility to do so. And the content of the moral imperative or the religious imperative in Islam does not run against the grain of nature or the grain of history. All these combine to make Islam quite attractive to the humans of the world.
It is widespread. It's just about a Muslim in every family, you know, somewhere along the line.
There are no statistics for the number of Muslims in the United States, but it has grown rapidly in the past two decades, especially among blacks. Zenobia Shah has been a Muslim for 9 years. She explains why she left Christianity for Islam.
The self-esteem as far as being Bilalian or black and doing for self-independence and really not falling victim to an inferiority complex as far as being a human being. As far as Christianity, it was just so many things I couldn't identify with, you know. In Al-Islam, we don't have the emotionalism of the singing, the organs, you know. It could really be scary for a young child.
The Muslim group Zenobia Shah joined was the Nation of Islam, at that time a black separatist organization with a powerful leader, Minister Elijah Muhammad. But the Nation of Islam's roots go back to the 1930s, when it was founded by the mysterious W.D. Fard. Fard, an Arab or Asian itinerant, taught Elijah Muhammad a religion that was a cross between Islam and Christianity. He said that the destiny of all American blacks was to be Muslim, because they comprised the ancient lost found nation of Islam. And he taught that all whites were incarnate devils. Fard disappeared in 1933, and a new leader took his place, Elijah Muhammad, who preached that Fard was really Allah himself. Monroe Anderson, a Chicago Tribune reporter who has covered the Nation of Islam for 6 years, says the young movement grew quickly.
It went from just a very local organization in Detroit, where he basically was collecting pimps and prostitutes and petty street crooks, to an international organization with business connections and a very well respected and in many cases feared system.
Elijah Muhammad's ultimate goal was for American blacks to establish a separate nation. As a step toward that goal, he emphasized black economic independence.
When he was firmly establishing the Nation of Islam, he had the farms, he had the black banks, he had the black businesses, whether it was the bakeries or the grocery store, the land holdings. They were importing fish from other countries. This idea of blacks developing businesses where they can hire other blacks, and therefore you don't have to necessarily go begging to white corporate America for jobs because you can employ your own, is now becoming quite popular. I think the man was visionary along those lines.
By the early 1960s, Elijah Muhammad claimed to have 500,000 followers. Many joined the Fruit of Islam, a body of men who studied martial arts and proselytized aggressively on the street corners. Hardworking members could rise quickly within the organization.
The thing that was interesting, most interesting about Elijah Muhammad and his movement, unlike almost all other black religious movements where you have a charismatic figure in America, is he always made room. He always promoted other people. There was room for change in his movement. I think that's why it's endured longer than most others. He'd allow other people to come to the forefront, become speakers. That's how we got Malcolm X, for example.
And now you're facing a situation where the young Negroes coming up, they don't want to hear that turn the other cheek stuff. No! In Jacksonville, those were teenagers. They were throwing Molotov cocktails. Negroes have never done that before. But it shows you there's a new deal coming in. There's a new thinking coming in. There's new strategy coming in. It'll be Molotov cocktails this month, hand grenades next month, and something else next month. It'll be ballots or it'll be bullets. It'll be liberty or it will be death. The only difference between this kind of death, it'll be reciprocal.
Malcolm X's electrifying personality and extraordinary talents as a speaker helped focus national attention on the movement. In the early 1960s, at the height of the civil rights struggle, the Nation of Islam's anti-white rhetoric was denounced by more moderate black leaders. But though the Nation spoke boldly, it took almost no direct political action for civil rights. By 1963, Malcolm had become dissatisfied with the nation's political isolationism, and other nation leaders resented his role as Elijah's spokesperson. His rash comments after the Kennedy assassination and his discovery of a sexual scandal involving Elijah led to his expulsion from the movement. In 1964, Malcolm made a pilgrimage to Mecca, and for the first time, he was exposed to Orthodox Islam. He was startled to see Muslims of all races worshiping together, and he began to reassess his ideas on the iniquity of whites. When he returned to the United States, Malcolm began organizing a new mosque and a new black political movement. But on February 21, 1965, Malcolm X, now El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, was assassinated.
Malcolm was killed. Two theories, of course. One, that the Philadelphia mosque was responsible for it. The other, that the CIA or the FBI or somebody was responsible for it. There are people in jail from the Philadelphia mosque. But there's, to this very day, there's still a lot of controversy as to whether they actually did it or did not. And that may be one of those mysteries that we'll have to live with forever.
Malcolm X was not the only nation member interested in Orthodox Islam. Elijah Muhammad's son Wallace was expelled twice for questioning the divinity of W.D. Fard. He returned to the fold in 1965, 1 week after Malcolm's assassination, and Elijah declared him his successor.
I was told that during a conversation, there was a meeting with a number of the imams, and Elijah was there, and Wallace was being criticized because at that point he had already started preaching Orthodox Islam and had moved away from the catechisms that Elijah had perpetuated over the decades. And some of Wallace's detractors had said were tattling. They were informing Elijah that his son, who he was choosing as his successor, was preaching against what he had preached. And Elijah was overjoyed. This is what I've been told. Okay, and he said, this has to be the new direction. Again, the way the story I was told went was that when Wallace was born, at that time, Elijah decided he would be his successor. He would be the next leader. I mean, at birth, it was decided. And that never changed. The interesting thing in meeting and talking with Wallace Muhammad is one is just immediately impressed with the spiritualism of the man. He is the most serene and spiritual person you can run across. I mean, he's just incredible that way. It's almost as if he's felt and believed that, or it was predetermined or something.
We are not a people who want to set up some powerful kingdom to enslave other people, but we are people who would like to see everybody like this. So we make pilgrimage to one center, and we invite everybody to make pilgrimage to that center. We all don't live in Mecca. Muslims are in Arabia, Muslims are in Africa, Muslims are in Asia, Muslims are in Europe, Muslims are in America, Muslims are in the isles of the world. But Muslims have one center called the Kaaba at Mecca.
Elijah Muhammad died in 1975, and Wallace took his place. Within 2 years, the movement was transformed. He changed the name from the Nation of Islam to the World Community of Al-Islam in the West to the American Muslim Mission. He disbanded the Fruit of Islam, opened membership in the American Muslim Mission to all races, and made it clear that he expected his followers to adhere to the five pillars or basic tenets of Islam: belief in Allah and Muhammad his prophet, daily prayer, charity, fasting, and the pilgrimage to Mecca.
This is the national broadcast of Mr. Muhammad Speaks, the program that's dedicated to truth and justice for all people of the earth. And now we present to you with honor the Chief Minister of the Nation of Islam, the Honorable W.D. Muhammad.
W.D. Muhammad.
Who is the man with the master plan?
W.D. Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Wallace's changes have been so successful that today members are revising their memories of Elijah.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad's activity was a generating force that stimulated and awakened social consciousness of the people who he was a member of. That is the African American people, or we refer to them as Bilalian people.
Imam Shamsuddin Ali is head of the American Muslim Mission Mosque and School in Philadelphia.
He dealt with the social derangement of the people's minds, and that social derangement we can clearly see was related to the persons, particularly African American people, having no amount of confidence, no amount of awareness of themselves. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad knew that was a psychological weight upon the people's minds. So he made them think of themselves as being great people. He used such great emphasis as to say, you are the original man, you are the first man, your pigmentation of skin indicates and shows that you are from the earth and the other people are not from the earth. He was not a religious teacher as such. He really gave the impact to our life in regards to belief in God, because he kept pointing out, he kept saying Allah, he kept saying the Quran was the book, he kept saying religion of Al-Islam is the religion that people need and that we need and we have to follow, and it's our religion and we should be Muslims. He kept saying that. But he never taught us the five pillars even, which is really actually essential in the religion of Al-Islam. He didn't do it. I'm sure he knew the five pillars, but he didn't teach the five pillars to us.
Dr. Ishmael Al-Faruqi.
I personally do not doubt that Elijah Muhammad was a genius who wanted to find a way of resurrecting the so-called lost found nation of Islam in the West. This lost found nation, he assumed, was the black people. And having suffered at the hands of the whites for hundreds of years, their identity had been smothered and then obliterated. And Elijah Muhammad's movement was one of that sought to restore the identity, the non-American, the Afro, the African identity to these people. Unfortunately, it took a racist turn at its beginning, as it were, thinking that the best way to counter evil is with a greater evil. And in accordance with that, the best way to counter white racism is to preach a black racism. But as soon as Elijah Muhammad died, it was time for his son, Wallace D. Muhammad, to make a change and to counter white racism, now that a substantial number of Afro-Americans have rediscovered their identity, to counter white racism with the true medicine for it, namely Islamic universalism.
It's nothing short of a miracle that he's been able to make such a dramatic change in so short a time. Of course, his biggest problem was the followers of the old faith. And the chief proponent of that was Minister Louis Farrakhan, who at the time was in charge of the New York mosque.
Your life is not worth a quarter in America. Your life is less than a dog's life in America. The white man will sit a dog at his table and will not even ask you to come in by the back door. He'll pick up a stray dog on the highway, and he will leave you on the highway hungry, naked, and out of doors. He will stop your car if you run over a dog, but will run over black men, black women, and black children day and night, shoot you down like a beast in the street, and then justified by saying, you attack them. Don't you tell me that we don't need a savior.
We need a
phone for the black man in America.
He had a significant following, just because he's a very eloquent speaker. Since then, there's been a split, with Farrakhan reviving the old Nation of Islam, complete with the Fruit of Islam, the paramilitary group. They're building a mosque. On Chicago's south side. They're preaching the old ideology, the white man is devil. Farrakhan even preaches the concept that Elijah Muhammad, being God, is not dead. And he challenges anyone to bring the body and show it as evidence that the man is in fact dead.
Brothers and sisters, a savior is born. I know you think Elijah is dead, but I'm here to tell you he is as alive as you sitting right down in that seat. Is he alive and well? But he's in power now.
Right.
I'm coming to you, United States government. I'm coming to you, Arab.
Come on.
Because I am his witness.
Louis Farrakhan's organization seems to have fewer members than the American Muslim Mission, though both groups have smaller memberships than the Nation of Islam under Elijah. The AMM does not see Louis Farrakhan as a threat. Imam Ali.
I don't see any real problems or any large number of people adhering themselves to what is being expounded by Minister Louis Farrakhan. Minister Louis Farrakhan, of course, proclaims that he is the one that should be successor to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad were in fact and are in fact to be taken literal, and that they were standard in their meaning, and therefore they had not do not need any interpretation. It's a little bit of a working of isolation there in that message, which excludes you from the rest of the general order of society, and I don't think that the people of the world today are willing to accept that.
Nevertheless, there are signs that the Nation of Islam's isolationist attitudes may be changing. Louis Farrakhan has made public addresses to the 20th anniversary rally of Martin Luther King's March on Washington and to Jesse Jackson's organization PUSH. He called for people of all races and all religions to unite in the struggle against all kinds of oppression. A spokesperson for Minister Farrakhan said this does not indicate a departure from Elijah Muhammad's teachings. Monroe Anderson.
And so you have that part of the movement continuing with Elijah's old ideologies, and then you have the American Muslim Mission, which has gone into mainstream America, into mainstream Islam, and a totally different approach.
AMM members wholeheartedly endorse the new direction the movement is taking.
Yeah, not only are they now Orthodox Muslims, but they are flag-waving Americans. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, they boast of it now. I mean, this isn't some observation I'm making or some type of analysis I'm drawing. I mean, they will point out the ways they have become very entrenched in the American way of life. They are now talking about running candidates, and in fact, they have in some instances in political races. They talk about their lawyers, they talk about their people entrenched in the system in various ways. They're talking about having people established on school boards, and they as part of their religious teachings now, they tell their followers that you must register to vote. That's part of your responsibility to country.
Imam Ali.
Well, we want to have, as is so advocated in America, equal representation. Equal representation. We feel that if we are in an area like one concentrated area and it's mostly African American people there, in the way of justice, in the way of right activities for development, I think that the representation there should be representation of African American people. I think the police department, the fire department, all of those entities should reflect that they are in an African American community. I think the stores and the factories should also reflect that.
Wallace Muhammad has built on Elijah's old principles of black economic independence. He founded a national purchasing cooperative called the Big Buy, which enables AMM members to buy everything from clothing to appliances as a block. Wallace has also launched a campaign to remove racial images of the divine, both because Islam forbids making pictures of God and because AMM members are offended by depictions of God as white. The AMM seeks political involvement not only on a local level, but internationally as well. American Muslims and Arab leaders have established ties of friendship and mutual support. AMM members oppose many of the policies of Israel, which has opened them to charges of anti-Semitism. The extent of the American Muslim mission's identification with the Arab world is demonstrated in a sermon Wallace Muhammad preached about the Islamic holy city, Mecca.
People didn't go there. They couldn't plant corn there. They couldn't plant beans or potatoes there. So they didn't go to there. They didn't go there for economic strength. They didn't go to the desert for economic wealth. But now in this last day, God is manifesting his great wisdom. And oh yeah, you thought I only could bless the people with spiritual wealth. Well, I show you, mister, I have had hid under this desert the material wealth. Beneath the barren land flow rivers of oil that have made those people not only spiritually the rich people of the world, but have made them materially the rich people of the world. Is that right? Now the Arabs are the money people of the world. Is that right? You have the best name, Muslim. You have the best religion, Islam. You have the best commandments, the five pillars of Islam. You have also the best book, the Holy Quran. And you have the best Qibla, our center for pilgrims, the Kaaba at Mecca. You have the best because it stands there representing the power of Almighty God to bring out of nothing something.
The AMM's orthodoxy means adherence to the strict dietary and behavioral injunctions of the Quran.
So after you became part of Al-Islam, what kind of things in your life began to change?
Okay, as far as giving up a lot of, you know, involvement and weaknesses such as drinking, smoking, fornicating, you know, just totally abstaining from the weak aspects of my life, you know, and really developing strength in what I believed in. As far as our diets are concerned, we are taught in many religions that we should not partake in the eating of pork. You know, we abstain, and our diets more or less are just really staying towards the natural way. And for example, raw sugar and opposed to granulated white sugar. You know, really we've been through a process of vegetables and natural things to sustain ourselves as far as our eating habits are concerned. As far as our dress, in which I'm sure poses questions in different people's mind that are not knowledgeable with Al-Islam, we're taught to dress modestly, okay? It's not written in our holy book, which is the Holy Quran, specifically what to wear, but we feel, as far as moving in society in this time, that the most modest way of dressing is to totally cover your body. Garments to your ankles, long sleeves, a head covering of the head, because all of these body parts can be seductive or exciting another person. And we really developed the understanding not to be oppressed in that.
I think what you mentioned is maybe the single thing that people have the most trouble understanding of, about al-Islam, the different roles that are set out for men and women. Can you describe just what the different roles are?
Yes, okay. As far as the women in al-Islam, we are the sustainers of the home, our children, our husbands. As far as the men in al-Islam, they are our leadership, okay? The man is the leader. In most religious doctrines or what have you, it is written, Bible, Holy Quran, that the men are the sustainers. They are the leaders.
Unlike members of Western religions with conservative views on women, and unlike Arab Muslim women, American Muslim women are encouraged to work outside the home. Zenobia Shah teaches kindergarten at the Clara Mohammed School in Philadelphia.
Would you like to sing the school song?
Yes. They're learning it. They are learning the school song. Please stand up. We'll sing the school song.
Sister Clara Muhammad School is dedicated to the total education of the student.
Barlin Talad Safik, principal of the Sister Clara Muhammad School in Philadelphia.
We put emphasis on both the moral and the academic growth and development of our students. We see a relationship between discipline and order and exactly how well the student is able to learn. So we just don't concentrate on the academics by themselves. We also work to develop the character of our students.
The educational theories of the Clara Mohammed faculty seem similar to those of Catholic school teachers. And in fact, Sister Clara Mohammed is a renovated Catholic high school. Boys and girls are taught in separate classrooms. The girls are dressed in long skirts and veils, and the boys in suits. Academic standards are high.
They definitely study basically the same subjects that they have in a public school, your language arts, your math, reading, and other subjects of that nature. In addition, we have our own religion-related subjects, such as Islamic studies. Also, we teach the Arabic language here. These are both very, very important aspects of our academic program.
Tell me something in Arabic, and then tell me what it means.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Kulu b'Rabbanas, Malikanas, Lahinas, Menshadil waswasil kanas, Alavi waswisu fisadoranas, Menajani wanas.
What does it mean in English?
It's a prayer called the Dawn, and we're still studying it. So far, I got the Arabic part down pat, but not the English part.
Mm-hmm. If you had a goal in mind for the kind of adults that you would like your students to grow up to be, what would that be?
I would like them to comfortably accept the religion, with understand why we're striving and working towards incorporating al-Islam in this society. I would definitely want them to be decent, decent, dignified women in society. I feel if they accept the religion, they can go very far. You know, if they just follow out with understanding, they can do anything.
In the Name of Allah, American Muslims is part of a series on religion in America called On This Side of Paradise. It was produced by Maeve McGoran and narrated by Anthony Mateo. Project directors were Ellen Chari and Anthony Mateo. It was produced for the Temple University Religion Department at WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Executive director was Professor Gerhard Spiegler of Temple University. Production assistant was Greg Allen. Engineers were Jay Goldman, Joyce Lieberman, Scotty Williams, and John Knapp. Special thanks to Dr. Ishmael Al-Faruqi. This program was made possible by grants from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council, the Samuel S. Fells Fund, and the Institute for Islamic Thought and Culture.